Kathy is entitled The Indigenous Worldview. You can single space and you can put standard margins on the sides. At the very top, you can center the word introduction, and the first paragraph is as follows. Indent, an anthropologist, comma, after living intimately with a bush tribe in West Africa, comma, wrote a novel describing introspectively what it was like to be a field worker among a non-literate people. Non-literate, one word. Her classic story of the outsider caught up and deeply, comma, personally involved in an alien culture concludes with the words, and here you can go down a space and indent, for the quotation is rather long. These people knew how to live at close quarters with tragedy, comma, how to live with their own failure and yet laugh. They knew the terror of a broken society, comma, where brother's hand is raised against brother in hate and fear, semicolon. They knew how to come back, comma, brother to brother, comma, and create life anew. Ellipsis marks. These people know the reality and laugh at it. Such laughter has little concern with what is funny. It is often bitter and sometimes a little mad, comma, for it is the laugh under the mask of tragedy, comma, and also the laughter that masks tears. They are the same. It is the laughter of people who value love and friendship and plenty, comma, who have lived with terror and death and hate. And this is the end of the quote. Just before the final period here, you can put in brackets, Bowen, B-O-W-E-N, comma, 1964. Now coming down a line or two, and still within the same initial paragraph, let's continue with the following words. When we speak of worldview, and worldview here is in single quotes, we, comma, like the anthropologist above, make one kind of attempt to characterize a traditional way of life. Worldview is one of those terms which are useful in asserting something of what is most general and persistent about a people. New paragraph. But the phrase worldview is a very nebulous one, for it carries within it something of the structure of things as man is aware of them. It is in the way we see ourselves in relation to all else. Some people may use the word to mean the conceptions of what ought to be as well as of what is. And included may be the characteristic ways in which experiences are kept together or apart, the patterns of thought. Worldview may be used to include the forms of thought and the most comprehensive attitudes towards life. A worldview can hardly be conceived without some dimension in time, some idea of past and of future, and the phrase is large enough and loose enough to evoke all kinds of ideas. Realizing these difficulties, an African anthropologist has concluded, quote, and this quotation will be also single spaced like you did the previous one, because it is sufficiently long. It is far more difficult to generalize concerning the worldview and the religions of the Congo peoples than to describe their social, economic, and political life, owing to the fact that the beliefs which control behavior have received so much less systematic study than the outer ritualistic forms of religion. And just before the period, you can put in brackets the name Herskovitz. The spelling, H-E-R-S-K-O-V-I-T-S. Herskovitz, comma, and the year for that is 1967. Another renowned anthropologist has said something similar. Quote, and this will be within the paragraph, you will not need to indent like with the previous ones. Concepts about worldview are hardly developed, comma, and comparative studies are barely begun. Within the brackets, you can put the name Redfield, R-E-D-F-I-E-L-D, comma. The date for this is 1953. New paragraph. Let us imagine worldview as being a stage set. On that stage, man is an important character, semicolon. In every worldview, there is an I, in single quotation marks, from which the view is taken. On the stage are other people, comma, towards whom the view is directed, and man, as a collective character, is upon the stage. He may speak his lines very loudly, or he may be seen as having but a minor part among other parts. On the stage also are things seen as not the same as man, comma, though they may be seen more or less like him. Unseen things are there too, colon, beings, principles, trends, and destinies. History, comma, with nature, comma, is part of worldview. All of this has a structure, comma, an arrangement that the worldview recognizes to persist and to have consequences for man. New paragraph. For the sake of definition, then, and at the risk of being overly simple, we will regard worldview as the way a people characteristically look outward upon the universe. A group's worldview proclaims how man and nature are organized, and also registers decisions about the value of such knowledge. Worldviews consist of perceptions informed by values. Worldview, then, is a good term to describe the aggregate of ideas and values that form the basis of a social system. The thinking of a man in an exotic community often looks erroneous to us, but that is because we are ignorant of his assumptions about man and nature. All social systems, large and small, first reason from a few unproven underlying assumptions, possibly self-evident axioms, A-X-I-O-M-S, comma, which as long as they work remain unchallenged. Understanding culture, comma, and especially serving as effective agents of change depends much on grasping the often unspoken assumptions in which a group trusts. New paragraph. This paper will attempt to describe the indigenous worldview. It will not speak about the worldview of the ordinary people of New York or Chicago. It will not describe the worldview of modern Londoners or Detroit auto workers. Rather, it will attempt to describe the worldview of those individual men and women who make up a society and who do not generally differ much among themselves. You will pardon me, I trust, for fleeing for refuge among indigenous peoples, where it is possible to attempt to summarize the worldview of a people or groups of people which more or less represent all the people within the group. You will agree with me that this is a much easier task than to attempt a description of New Yorkers' world views, a place where what one man thinks can be quite different from what most New Yorkers think. The next section, number one, will be entitled The Universal Nature of World Views. New paragraph. Keeping the conception of worldview being a stage set, is it possible to say something about the common stage on which all mankind walks? If worldview is one way to characterize universal human nature, is it possible to describe what is true of all worldviews? To what extent can it be said that all men everywhere look out upon the same universe in similar ways? New paragraph. To begin with, it seems necessary to suppose that every worldview starts from the man who is the viewer and includes the idea of a self. Everybody looks out on a world from a viewpoint which he identifies with that individual towards which alone he finds himself looking when he looks inward. The worldview includes also other people. It recognizes other people, and it views people as representing generalized roles. Also, it seems possible to include within this generalization of worldview an arrangement of groupings of people according to qualitative differences connected with the groupings, not merely with the individuals who are grouped. Ways in which men may be characteristically seen as different from women in societies. Ways in which small and intimate kinship groups, for example, the nuclear family, can be viewed. Ways in looking at the older people, or the younger people, or the siblings in that universal group. And it is probably safe also to say that among the groupings of people in every society are always some that distinguish people who are my people, comma, or are more my people, comma, from people who are not so much my people. This we hyphen they difference is very important on the universal stage. New paragraph. It seems possible also to include in the universal worldview a recognition of difference between man and that which is not man. As people look out upon a universe, they seem to be able to distinguish very easily between men and animals, or invisible beings, or the trees and the stars. The worldview also would seem to include some conception of human nature. The differences among worldviews in this respect are, of course, quite as important as the resemblances. New paragraph. Another universal in mankind's worldview is the ability for all men to be able to distinguish between man's own nature and the elements around him. Earth and sky are distinguishable. Water has its nature apart from earth. Fire burns you if you touch it. Men observe that there is a horizon, that stars, sun, and moon make similar sorts of appearances with similar sorts of immediate consequences for men. Also, every worldview includes some spatial and temporal orientation. The cosmos has extension, duration, and periodicity. The spelling of that last word, Kathy, periodicity. New paragraph. Included also in every man's worldview is the place of the universal human experience. Birth and death are for everyone to experience, and in lesser degree of universal impact, maturation, menstruation, menopause, and sexual intercourse. For those who do not experience these later common experiences, there is at least the experience of knowing that others do. What is important in mentioning this particular universal is not merely the recitation of what is part of our animal nature, but rather the degree and kind of resemblances among the attitudes taken towards these inevitable events. Men generally look upon birth as an occasion of hazard. Death is unavoidable, and on the whole, undesirable. New paragraph. this summary of mankind's universal worldview shares the vagueness, V-A-G-U-E-N-E-S-S, of all universal characterizations of mankind that take some account of the great variations that exist. But nevertheless, it is an attempt to indicate the ways in which the world is viewed by all peoples in similar ways. At this point, Kathy, we shift to a second division within the paper, number 2, entitled Specific World Views. New paragraph. Against this general background of universal elements, it is possible now to look at some features of specific worldviews. New paragraph. The mountain Arapesh, capital M-O-U-N-T-A-I-N, another word, A-R-A-P-E-S-H, the mountain Arapesh have been described by Margaret Mead in great detail. The worldview of this Melanesian people takes little account of earth and sky, time or space, origins or explanations. They have no cosmology. They do little explaining as to how things came to be. Dr. Mead tells us that their outlook on the universe is primarily affective, affective, comma, not cognitive. She says that to them, things are connected because the same emotional attitude is taken towards them. This worldview is concerned primarily not with gods or physical universe, but with human nature. With human nature seen as dangerous and powerful sexuality which must be managed by both men and women in ritual and careful restraint so that procreation and prosperity may be assured. Nevertheless, this worldview, like others, includes special attitudes towards what we would call nature. Things like water holes or sharp declivities, D-E-C-L-I-V-I-T-I-E-S. And this worldview includes, like others, beings, neither men nor physical universe. Here, invisible beings that inhabit these places and with the spirits of the kinship group guard them. The Arapesh worldview could be related to a triangle of man, nature, God, just as it seems possible to say, all worldviews could be related. But this particular one centers upon man's nature, and the attitude is emotional. There is little intellectual systemization. The universe is very loosely structured. New paragraph. In contrast to the unsystematized worldview of the Arapesh, there are the Zuni, an American Indian group whose worldview has been described by Ruth Bunzel, B-U-N-Z-E-L. Their worldview is more clearly structured. For them, man and nature are more equally included. In place of the management of sexuality, as with the Erepesh, the central place in the confrontation of the cosmos is occupied by the concept of preservation of the harmonious identification of God, nature, and man in one enduring, recurrent system. Recurrent, R-E-C-U-R-R-E-N-T. The Zuni look to God and nature as well as to man. For them, the duty of man is the performance of those collective rituals that maintain a perpetual and unchanging harmonious oneness of God, man, and nature. It is very necessary for them that they do their part in a persistent system. Man helps to keep things running. Semicolon. Man does not alter or destroy or even obey particular orders. New paragraph. The ancient Mesopotamians can also be characterized briefly. Spelling of Mesopotamians, Mesopotamians. For these people, all things had will, character, and power. All things, -, salt, fire, sky, earth, man, were arranged in a vast, complex hierarchy of power. And here, as with the Zuni, we have a worldview in which man confronts a supernatural, including both natural objects and unseen beings and powers. For the Mesopotamian, the emphasis was on obedience, was an obedience to power, earthly, and celestial. The gods are powerful, -, they meet from time to time to make new decisions. The duty of man is to obey the order that comes. Having viewed briefly, having viewed briefly the differing elements within three worldviews, let us now look at the worldview of Melanesians. After describing certain similarities, it will then be possible to mention several differences. New paragraph. Generally, the epistemological, epistemological, and metaphysical, metaphysical, the epistemological and metaphysical assumptions of the Melanesian worldview are relatively simple. comma, for they combine a few conceptual elements in order to define what in general were practical ends in an essentially mundane existence. Native emphasis was primarily on the pragmatic manipulation of a limited number of ideas and ritual expedients to acquire explicit socio-economic, hyphen between those two, socio-economic benefits for the Melanesians. There was in this pervasive materialism little room or incentive for any deep concern with the spiritual per se, P-E-R-S-E, per se. Melanesians did not, for example, trouble themselves generally about the nature of the transcendental, T-R-A-N-S-C-E-N-D-E-N-T-A-L, or try to assure themselves of personal salvation through attaining a state of grace. In effect, the Melanesian worldview was anthropocentric, A-N-T-H-R-O-P-O-C-E-N-T-R-I-C, anthropocentric, comma, here and now, cosmos, a here and now cosmos, comma, one that included both the natural environment and the equally immediate non-natural surroundings. New paragraph. Thus, the worldview for Melanesians included the physical, tangible world, the people in it, the spirits of dead people, and creative beings such as deities or culture heroes. Usually, the last mentioned were thought not only to have shaped the world and to have set man in it, but also at the same time to have endowed man with culture, for instance, the arts of horticulture, H-O-R-T-I-C-U-L-T-U-R-E, the arts of horticulture and animal husbandry, of hunting and fishing, of house building and tool making, of trading and ceremony, and the myths related how the original creators imparted this basic and esoteric knowledge to men through the medium of dreams and visions and by other means. New paragraph. The spirits of the dead, on the other hand, were not generally regarded as creative in this way, but rather as protective of the everyday ongoing interests of their living kin, provided, of course, that the latter in turn behave properly towards them by offering on appropriate occasions food, valuables, services, or sometimes simply public respect. The aid that men received from the dead spirits might range from outright defense of their material property, from encroachment, E-N-C-R-O-A-C-H-M-E-N-T, encroachment by enemies to warnings in dreams of future events, whether feasts or fights. New paragraph. Important in all of these systems of belief, then, was the notion of communication with such supernatural entities as gods and ghosts, comma, especially to acquire certain special knowledge whose possession ensured success or safety in doubtful situations. Communications with the supernatural or non-empirical in Melanesia were essentially in the form of oracles, comma, ritualized and susceptible of misinterpretation. New paragraph. While the worldview of Melanesians can generally be described as epistemologically and metaphysically naive and simple, with all peoples placing great emphasis on the importance of material benefits, comma, it is possible to note several distinctions between highlanders and coastals. On the coast, there exists the idea of acquiring secret knowledge to coerce in a relatively mechanical way the supernatural beings, especially deities, into conferring success, wealth, and power on man. In the mountains, however, the aim more often is to propitiate or to bargain with spirits of the dead in the hope that they might choose to help man, or at least not obstruct him in his efforts to achieve wealth, prestige, and similar items. For the Highlanders, the rituals do not really offer a substitute for ordinary skills and hard work in attaining certain culturally valued ends, but rather they avert, A-V-E-R-T, undesirable supernatural hindrance of men's actions. We thus might regard the coastal worldview as containing a quasi-technology, Q-U-A-I-S-I hyphen technology, whose proper employment automatically guarantees success in any situation. Whereas the Highlanders' worldview contains elements which demand a kind of quasi-sociology, whose predictions are always dubious, but whose value for the believer lies in providing post facto, P-O-S-T-F-A-C-T-O, post facto, you can underline both of those words, explanations of important social events. On the coast, the worldview demanded ritual manipulation of the supernatural. In the highlands, empirical tools could be combined with shrewdness in the struggle to get ahead in life. In short, the Highlanders can be described as containing a pervasive pragmatism. The third division now, Kathy, transformation of worldviews. The question may be asked as to whether or not worldviews have power and are persistent through the passage of time. Most of the documented literature would strongly claim that worldviews do have a strong tenacity. Opposition, for example, to the pressure of missionaries for monogamy, or missionary influence in other directions, are but cases in point. In my own background, for example, many of the values of the Amish, A-M-I-S-H, worldview still color my behavior. Even though my maternal grandfather and numerous other progressives of his time left the Amish world of horses and buggies, unpainted barns, and buttonhole shoes to form Mennonite communities, many of the deep-seated, ingrown values of the Amish worldview still remain, dash, dash, if not entirely, comma, at least in part. Among the doctrines of this worldview is agrarianism, A-G-R-A-R-I-A-N-I-S-M. For the Amish world is strongly conditioned by first-hand experience with nature, the ordered seasons, comma, celestial objects such as the moon and stars, comma, and the world of growing plants and animals provide the Amish with a sense of order and destiny. Hard work with the soil, comma, where muscles and limbs ache from daily toil, comma, provides human satisfaction. All family heads are required to limit their occupation to farming or to closely related activities such as operating a sawmill, carpentering, or masonry. Hard work, thrift, and social concern for the believing community find sanction in the Bible. The city, by contrast, is held to be the center of worldly progress, of laziness, of non-productive spending, and often of wickedness. Man occupies his right place in the universe when he is caring for the things in, quote, the garden, comma, quote, that is, the plants and animals created by God. The Amish agrarian experience for several centuries has been conducive to isolation, characteristic of the ideal-typical folk society, comma, which greatly strengthens their religious outlook on life. New paragraph. Nevertheless, transformation within worldviews does occur. Dr. Redfield a student of worldview transformation, has pointed out three elements of the worldview of pre-civilized man, which he claims have been transformed in recent years. The three elements are these. There is a unitary character within the cosmos. That is to say, the world of preliterate people is pervaded with sacredness. Man is involved with nature. Two, primitive man does not, and pre-civilized man did not, so much set out to control or master or exploit. And the third element, in the primary worldview, man and the supernatural are bound together in one moral order. If these elements can be compared with what has come to prevail in modern times, especially in the West, where science has been so influential, it is possible to recognize a great transformation of the human mind. Dr. Redfield claims, "It is that transformation by which the primitive worldview has been overturned." That last sentence, Kathy, should have quotation marks. He goes on to say, "The three characteristics of that worldview which have been stressed in these pages have weakened or disappeared. Man comes out from the unity of the universe within which he is orientated now as something separate from nature, and comes to confront nature as something with physical qualities only, upon which he may work his will. As this happens, the universe loses its moral character and becomes to him indifferent, a system uncaring of man. The existence today of ethical systems and of religions only qualifies this statement. Ethics and religion struggle in one way or another to take account of a physical universe indifferent to man." You can put just before that final period, Kathy, Redfield, comma, 1953,